We are in really the book of Proverbs, and so you can turn there. I'm just going to make reference to the actual passage we're coming from. But if you're not certain where the book of Proverbs are, in right in front of you in the pew, you should have a small black Bible. And if you just go to page 461, you'll be in the book of Proverbs, and then we will be moving around in there throughout the rest of this day. All of this, as you know, for those who are here frequently or consistently, is that Paul commands with the final command in the book of Ephesians in the New Testament that we are to walk or conduct ourselves as wise men, not as unwise men. That we are to recognize that we live in an age that requires a tremendous amount of wisdom because the days are evil. And we're not talking about just the days of evil in the last few weeks or months in our own nation. Since the coming of Christ and the death, burial, and resurrection of Jesus Christ, where we had the outpouring of the Holy Spirit, and in Acts chapter 2, Peter preaches that first famous sermon on the day of Pentecost. And he says that these are the last days of which the prophets spoke of. Since that time, we have been living in that anticipatory time in which we are awaiting the coming of our Lord. We are awaiting the summation, if you will, the completion of all events, where Christ comes back and receives his people to himself. And he judges the living and the dead. And those who are outside of him, those who are his enemies, are consigned to hell. So it's a serious time. The days, the age, the realm that we live within is an evil one. And it requires us to work for the last 2,000 plus years to walk and to work in a wise manner. And too often, because we allow the world to work its way into our thinking and our value system, we end up kind of slouching our way toward eternity, just kind of wandering with our hands in our pockets and a silly tune in our head and really no sense of what's going on. And so we've been looking at what does it mean when the Bible talks about one who is wise versus one who is unwise, which is how Paul calls it. In the Old Testament, they just say it more bluntly and say you're a fool. So we've looked at what a fool is. A fool is, as you know, one who marks his life, her life, with a stiffening against the Word of God. They don't want to be told what the Word says, and when they hear it, they don't like it, and they're looking for ways around it. We also have learned that you don't just accidentally stumble into wise living and thinking. It comes from a life and a heart and a mind that has disciplined to think that way. And so when we look at the book of Proverbs, it helps us grasp the idea of what it looks like to walk as a wise person rather than a fool. When you read the book of Proverbs, one challenge for you will be, though, understanding what it does to you. Understand that the book of Proverbs essentially is like a big paddle for children's rear ends, meaning it's designed to discipline you. It's designed to train you. So that you might learn how to conduct yourself and how to understand life. And so what you're doing is you're essentially being placed at the Lord's feet, and he then faithfully and patiently begins to instruct you. And as you bend yourself to his ways and as you submit yourself to him, you will find much blessing and much to rejoice in. But there will be moments, and it's because of the nature of what Proverbs does, there will be moments in your life where you will stiffen, and that's where you'll start to run into the more painful aspects of what the Proverbs do. As they begin to reveal to you the way God has built this world, how he's hardwired it, if you will, so that certain natural consequences come your way simply so that they might train you in a better way, a right way. And so this requires that you listen to the book of Proverbs and hear it, that you're not resistant to it. And you have to make certain that you're not rejected or refuse it. What Proverbs does and why it can be so painful is it has a habit of revealing to you the part in your life that's unruly or undisciplined. If you were to spend 1 month, 31 days, just reading one chapter of Proverbs every day, thinking about it, by the time you're done, you probably have a lot of things highlighted in, I need to get better at this. things that are just revealed to you that you're not good at, that maybe you're actively resistant to. And that's the nature of what Proverbs do. So last week we talked about three conditions necessary to finding wisdom. And the first was that you just have to be receptive to it. All of you probably at some point in your life have encountered that person, and probably was that person at some point, where when you need to instruct them, they look at you and their eyes are stern and angry and shielded and their arms are crossed and their whole demeanor is saying, you know, I don't even want to listen to what you have to say. And you've experienced that. Again, probably you've given that to somebody. As a pastor, I encounter that on a reasonably frequent basis. That you call them in, you sit them down, and they're not even wanting to listen to you in the slightest. If that's you, then you're guaranteed never to find wisdom, simply because you're not even receptive to it. The second thing I said that you need to be ready to do is to ask for that wisdom in prayer. That you need to be one who is seeking God, who is the giver of all wisdom. And then lastly, I said, you need to study the Word. If you're going to find wisdom, and the wisdom is at the most basic level, it's found when you fear the Lord, when you believe in Yahweh, the one true God, the only God, that He alone can deliver you, that He alone is supreme, and that you submit yourself under Him. It's the faith in Jesus Christ kind of fear that the Bible talks about, that is the beginning of your wisdom. But it's not the end of it. From there, then, as one who fears the Lord, you receive His Word, and now you become a student of the Word, so that every year, every day, in fact, you're growing a little bit more and more to be a man or woman of the Word. Now, as you do all of that, you will find the prize of wisdom and the knowledge of God. But it's a lifetime journey, and it's not something that a wise person wearies of. From there, we began to describe the wise person and focus on the idea that the wise person is one who departs from evil. And I kind of camped on that, which ended up making that my whole sermon. But the wise man, the wise woman, is one who is cautious and recognizes that the days are evil and that he lives among evil, that his own heart has a propensity for sin, so that he is one that is not going to be quick to assume everything's going to work out. He's not going to be quick to assume that nothing bad will happen, if you will. But she is thinking and examining all things that's coming back toward them, that they're observing, that they're thinking about, they're planning for even, so that they might be one who departs from evil the moment that they begin to realize this is wrong. All of you will have that in your life, that you'll be somewhere in your life, and you're not certain how it happened maybe at that moment, but you realize you're where you shouldn't be. The fool will just keep blundering on, but the wise man, the wise woman, sees the evil and departs from it and moves away. And so we use examples of that with Joseph, how he saw the overt evil of Potiphar's wife, and he literally fled from her. Even though he knew it was going to possibly cost him his life, he would not partake of it. And the young man of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego who said, look, you can toss us in a furnace of fire. We're not going to bow down. Our Lord is able to save us, but frankly, even if he doesn't save us, it doesn't matter. We're not bowing. We're not bowing. It's evil. We will not go that way. So with that, we want to pick up and carry on with this idea of the wise man. And I spoke a little bit on this last week, but I want to just, for my own preaching purposes, pick up where we left off with that a wise man will listen and learn from God. And that was in Proverbs chapter 8, Proverbs chapter 8, verse 32. He says, now therefore, O sons, listen to me. Why? For blessed are they who keep my ways. The blessed means they're the envied ones, ones who are in an enviable position. When you look at a person who listens to wisdom and settles their life around that wisdom and pursuing the wisdom and submitting to it, you will find them to be in an enviable position, a place that you would like to be if you're not there already. He goes on to say, heed instruction and be wise and do not neglect it. Blessed is the man who listens to me, watching daily at my gates and waiting for my at my doorposts. The person is wise when he hears the instruction and he does not refuse it, and that there is much blessing that comes from obeying what he hears and learns. This is the same truth that's in the introduction of the book in Proverbs chapter 1, verse 5, that we are a people, a wise man will hear, he says, and increase in learning. And a wise man, or a man of understanding, will acquire wise counsel. Notice, it's not the fool that will acquire the wise counsel, but the wise one. The one who has already started by having a life in submission to the Holy One, to God Himself, that person, as they pursue wisdom, they will always be seeking to acquire more and more and more. So, first lesson for you today, if you want to grow with regard to wisdom, so that you walk as a wise man and not one who is foolish, is start listening. Just learn to open your ears to counsel and godly wisdom. Look and seek out for those who speak it. Make certain that the kinds of books that you immerse yourself in are books that bring to you wisdom. Especially if you are not a fast reader. John Piper made that point that he is an incredibly slow reader. I think like only 250 words a minute or something, which is not fast at all. And so what he found that he had to do as a man who worked and earned a doctorate and in theology was that he had to pick his books very carefully so that he didn't waste the time, because he knew that because he read so slow that any reading that he's going to do better be good stuff so that he doesn't clutter up and waste that time in the days of evil pursuing things that have no value. If you're faster, then you should be trying to constantly immerse yourself into good, sound doctrine. I'm currently reading a book by a Puritan on understanding the snares and schemes of Satan and the precious promises on how to avoid that. Just a good book. And anytime you read a Puritan, you're diving into the deep end usually. But it's a good book. It's a worthwhile book, one to chew on and contemplate. But you will never listen unless you have a humble heart. So cultivate that humility that I can always learn something else. Secondly, not only will he listen and learn from God, but in Proverbs 24, we see that he will learn from others. And this is oftentimes the way that God will speak to you. When you say, well, I'm praying that God will guide me, and you're looking for some way that God's going to communicate, the means by which he normally does that will be the word, and the secondary means that he oftentimes will do that is through his people. And so that if you do not learn to listen to others and get their advice, you oftentimes are already cutting yourself out of a critical aspect in which the Lord will come along your side. But in Proverbs 24, verses 5 and 6, a wise man is strong, and a man of knowledge increases power. Why? For by wise guidance you will wage war, and in abundance of counselors there is victory. The wise man is strengthened, in other words, in his knowledge by seeking additional counsel from others. He's not an island. Any of you who think that nobody needs to know your business, that they don't need to be in your life, that you're a private man, you're a private woman, and you're not going to be asking these things, all you're setting yourself up for is folly. You're setting yourself up to a situation because you will not simply go to those who have wisdom and seek their counsel, which means maybe looking like an idiot at times, right? As they say, okay, well, tell me what your plan was. Well, I was thinking of doing this. And they're looking at you like, you're joking, right? No, why? Oh, that's dumb. You know, and you're like, well, that's kind of harsh. Well, yeah, but it's dumb. You know, you run that risk, right? When you lay yourself out and say, well, this is what I was thinking of doing. And hopefully that if they're truly wise, they'll be kind to you. But at the same time, they're going to have to call it like it is and speak to you. But if you're a wise person, you're going to increase that as you seek to hear the counsel of others. Now, remember that the book of Proverbs was specifically written for the training of kings. So this is Solomon's writings primarily, and he is using this then to prepare for the next person to in line and for all future kings, so that they might know wisdom and understand how to rule a kingdom. And that's why he's talking about the waging war and finding victory. In other words, don't be the Rehoboam that I spoke about last week. Rehoboam, the son of Solomon, who took over the kingdom and then immediately split it, where 10 of them rebelled because he was so foolish to listen to foolish counsel. Rehoboam will never be remembered for a wise thing he did. Rehoboam will always be known as the king who destroyed Israel and split them, so that he was only left with two of the 10 twat tribes. So don't be that man. Don't listen to the foolish person. Gather around you the wise people. You want to be like a Josiah. If you can, turn to 2 Chronicles. 2 Chronicles 34. Josiah was just an amazing young king. Josiah was 8 years old when he became king, and he reigned 31 years in Jerusalem. And he did right in the sight of Yahweh and walked in the ways of his father David and did not turn aside to the right or the left. For in the 8th year of his reign, so now how old is he? Yes, 16. So he's 16 now. An event took place. He was still a youth, and he began to seek the God of his father David. And in the 12th year, he began to purge Judah. So notice the flow. He was as a young boy, he was a good king. He was probably being shepherded by very wise counselors. By the time he was 16, though, he on his own really began to pursue after God on his own. And by the 12th year of his reign, he then recognizes that things are really wrong in his nation. And he is the king, so he begins to purge Judah and Jerusalem of all the high places, the Asherim, which are basically these wooden poles in which all kinds of sexual sin would occur in the name of worship. The carved images, the molten images, they tore down the altars of the Baals in his presence. At the incense altars that were high above them, he chopped down also the Asherim, the carved images, the molten images, he broke in pieces, ground to powder, and scattered it on the graves of those who had sacrificed. Are you getting the sense this man is very focused? He's 20 now, and he's like, I've sought the Lord, I see the evil, we need to eradicate this evil. And he is now going throughout this nation, and every place that there's a high place, they would always find hilltops and high places, which is where they would raise up their altars. He would have it destroyed. He was actually personally overseeing it. He's making it very clear, a very strong statement to the people of Israel, that this cannot be tolerated. And so he has this pursuit of wisdom and a pursuit of God that then moves to a focused destruction. And only then does he then begin to have the house of the Lord rebuilt. It's fallen into disrepair. It's broken down. And now that the nation has been cleansed from the idols, now he can begin to rebuild the temple so that the people might now have only one place and one place alone that they look to and come to for worship, the place of Yahweh. But in verse 14, as they're going through this, you come to, I've always thought of this as, every time I read this, I always think this is one of the saddest verses of the Bible, and it's also one of the ones that gives me much hope. When they were bringing out the money which had been brought into the house of the Lord, the temple, Hilkiah, the priest, found the book of the law of the Lord given by Moses. Isn't that sad? They're rooting around, and they open a closet, and they're like, what's this? I don't know. And they're flipping through, and they find the book of the law given by Moses. Essentially what it's saying is that the word of the Lord had been silenced in this land, which is why so much of the sin was going on. And they're like, check this out. They've dusted off, and they bring it, and they read it to Josiah. And he is broken. And he commands that it be read in the hearing of all of the people of Israel. So now they're going out into the land, and they are reading again the word of the Lord. They're hearing for the first time, many of them, the written word of the Lord being proclaimed to them and taught to them as he brings finally a nation back into wisdom and back for at least his reign into a righteous path. This is the idea of when you are listening and you're acquiring wisdom and you're gaining wisdom and you're listening to the counsel of others, that you will do much good versus what Rehoboam did. In Proverbs 24, verses 3 and 4, it says, "By wisdom a house is built, and by understanding it is established. And by knowledge the rooms are filled and all with all precious and pleasant riches." You learn wisdom in the same way that you carefully build any household. You can go into many homes and you can look at how it is and realize that this is a house that has been carefully thought through, or this is a house that has no thought at all in it. There's no plan, there's no purpose, it's just there. You can look at families the same way, right? You can go into some homes and you find a home that is warm and rich and inviting. You find that when you go in there that you're filled with joy and peace and pleasure because it's a house that's founded on the Lord with a hospitable heart and children that love the Lord and the love and will obey their parents and parents that speak truth into the lives of their children, so that it doesn't matter if it's a rich house or a poor house, it's a good house. It's a wise house. And all of you hopefully have experienced that in your life. Hopefully all of you are seeking to build that into your own home. Well, it doesn't happen by accident, right? It's by bit, building it and planning it and thinking through the issues. That's the same way that you learn wisdom. You have a plan and you begin to put it into place and you begin to gather it. You walk cautiously and depart from evil. You learn to listen to God. You learn to listen to others. And as you do that, you start to develop a plan. I know that Kim and I were blessed. We were talking to John and Esme yesterday and just talking about discipleship of women. And we were reflecting on Kim and how she had two different women who were able to speak into her life when she was a young mother. Liz George, some of you have her books, was one of the women. Another was the wife of the dean of the seminary. Her name was B. Mayhew. She was a pistol. She was a great lady and she was a kind lady. Kim always enjoyed watching her. She'd be up in the choir and she's the one that's bouncing around and moving her head around while everyone else is kind of the frozen chosen, as we'd call ourselves at Grace. But these women left a mark in my wife's life. And as a result of them, as a result of Jim George, Liz's husband, a theology professor, Dr. Zemek, who is my Paul. As a result of men like this in my life and women like those in her life, we would come home at times and there would be things in our homes that we would realize, you know what, that wasn't properly planned. And we have to kind of back it up and readjust. And you know what, we need to tighten this up. We need to loosen up here. Maybe a sin needs to be confessed, whatever it might be. But all of that is just that acquiring of wisdom. And as you do that, you begin to plan and plot out a careful direction for your household. Are you doing that? Are you learning to walk as wise people, not as unwise? In Proverbs chapter 6, one of my favorite passages as well. Proverbs chapter 6, verse 6, we learn another thing of how a wise man becomes a wise man. The wise man is one who is actually even able to be taught by an ant. In verse 6, it says, "Go to the ant, O sluggard." I love that word. "Go to the ant, O sluggard. Observe her ways and" what? Be wise. Be taught. Be instructed. Gain knowledge. Now, who is it that needs to go look at the ant? The sluggard. Who is telling him to go do that? You don't have to have a name. The wise man. Why does a wise man tell the sluggard to go look at the ant? Why would he even think that he should go look at an ant? What has already occurred? The wise man has already spent time looking at the ant. It's not like he was sitting around in the shower one day and say, "Hey, I should tell lazy people to go look at ants." It's because the wise man actually is watching ants. And thinking about ants. Go to the ant. Why? Because the wise man has said, or has seen the ant, observed the ant. And look, he goes on down to verse 11 about what an ant is teaching him. It's this. Don't despise, in other words, a wise man, a wise woman does not despise the little things in life. He recognizes that this is still whose world? It's still God's world, and He has created it. And He's established it with certain rules, and so that He can look into the heavens and into the depths of the ocean and on the ground itself, and He can witness much wisdom, because it was by wisdom that God founded this world of ours. And so He watches and observes and learns, and then He uses those things as examples to go to the one who needs to learn and say, you should go and sit and watch. A wise parent is constantly watchful for life lessons. Constantly. Guys, don't turn your brain off. I tell parents all the time this, and I'll say it again for those who've never heard me. Fathers, do not take a trip to the hardware store alone. Always have a kid with you. Always have a kid with you. Never lose that moment of opportunity where you can instruct, encourage, or just tickle one of yours. Those moments where they alone, no more sharing of daddy, just them sitting with you and you talking to them as you're heading to the hardware store. And you will be amazed at the things that you'll hear that are thoughts of their mind, sometimes alarming, sometimes encouraging, but always, if you're a wise father, that you're looking and listening. But you're also able to look at situations as you're driving down the road and walking along the sidewalk. My daughter Nicole to this day can properly eat an ice cream cone. You know why? I taught her. We would go for a bicycle ride. We were dirt poor. I couldn't afford an ice cream cone for everybody. But she and I would go riding our bicycles. And then afterwards, we'd get an ice cream cone and sit on the gutter. And I would teach her how to eat it so that no drips occurred. But, I mean, but sitting there, you'd be amazed at the conversations my little Nichols and I would have. Just watching and seeing. But you know what? You also see the fool walk by. You see the staggering drunk. You watch the child that's completely having a meltdown in public. And you're able to speak to that and point your child to that and say, look at that. That's what it looks like to be disrespectful. That's what it looks like to be a fool. That's what it looks like. Don't hide them from those things. Reveal them. Let them know that you see them too. But now you're able to give them the godly interpretation of what that is and why it is. Ask them when they find a person asleep on a piece of cardboard by the side of the road, what do you think happened? What do you think happened that put that person there? Do you think when they were 10 that they thought they'd be sleeping on the sidewalk at age 30? I was with my little ones, and a bad accident had just occurred, and there's a woman dead. I mean, there was no way I could shield them from that. I don't even know if they remember this. It was just Nicole and Becca. But a woman was dead. A drunk had run the red light and T-boned and killed her instantly. Her children were in the back of the pickup and had been ejected. And they had a flight for life. And it came to the school right across the street from our house, which was something that Kim to this day, I think Nikki admitted that she still prays every time she hears the flight for life. Kim made the habit that whenever they pulled over for an ambulance, that she would always lead the children in prayer for whoever was in there. Simple. Go to the ant, O sluggard, and learn and be wise. When you as a parent take advantage of those little moments and they make a mark on the life of the child. I remember holding their hands and we watched the gurney be taken out of the ambulance as a helicopter just settled. And all of a sudden you realize that there's two little bundles on that one gurney. And I think it was Becca says, well, what is that? I said, oh, sweetie, those are little ones. They're hurt. And they got really quiet, and so we prayed for them, and then we had to go, and we ended up going to the accident just as they're pulling the dead woman out of the car. What did I speak to? Oh, don't look at that. No, you know what I spoke to them is about the reality that death happens. And that if you are not ready to receive come into the presence face to face with your judge or your savior, you have much to fear. That this life does not promise you tomorrow. Now some might say that's just too much to give to a kid. I don't agree. They need to learn that, need to learn it right away. When they have to say goodbye to their pet kitty cat. Don't hide it from them. Reality. The reality of a broken world. The days are evil. Walk therefore as wise and not unwise. Grab every opportunity, beloved. You see the rainbow, by golly, take the rainbow back. Every time you see a rainbow, to remind the children of the promises and the faithfulness of God. I would go dirt biking, and up where I went, you ran into a bristlecone pine tree. They're ugly. I think they're cool looking, but you're not going to get any usable lumber off of them. But they also live for like 1,000+ years. Try to kick one, though, and you're going to hurt. Those things aren't budging. They're rough, gnarled, bent, twisted, and their roots go deep, deep, deep into the very mountain itself to gain sustenance. But they can endure anything for 1,000+ years. Is that not another good example of what it looks like to bear up in sufferings? As James says, that when you let it have its perfect result, the sufferings and the trials that you've encountered, rather than whining about it and complain about, but that you learn to bear up under it, that you will be perfect and complete, lacking in nothing. I don't know of a better thing than a bristlecone pine. You can do this in everything. Go into a place where a building is broken down or a parking lot is no longer used, and just show how it's slowly falling apart and speak of the brokenness of this world. All of this is a way that you, as a wise person, can teach your children who need to learn wisdom. And all of us, as people pursuing wisdom, can learn if we'll only open our eyes to it. Just open our eyes. Upon that same idea, Proverbs chapter 24, you can learn from the mistakes of others. The wise one says this, I passed by the field of the sluggard and by the vineyard of the man lacking sense. And behold, it was completely overgrown with thistles, its surface was covered with nettles, and its stone wall was broken down. And when I saw it, I reflected upon it, and I looked and received instruction. See, he doesn't just pass by and cluck his tongue and say, oh. He paused. He's like, let's think about this. Let's look at this. Let's make observations. Let's come to some conclusions. And this was his instruction. He says, a little sleep and a little slumber, a little folding of the hands to rest, and then your poverty will come as a robber and your want like an armed man. The fool is one who is so self-confident that he will think that his sin is even right. Which is why for the sluggard, who is just a lazy fool, his time of horror and destruction comes upon him suddenly, because he doesn't recognize the state of the affairs that his household and his life is in, that it's literally slowly falling apart, and he keeps thinking, I'll get to it, but he never does. So in Proverbs chapter 10, verse 23, it says this of the fool, doing wickedness is like sport to a fool, and so is wisdom to a man of understanding. What a horrible contrast, but what a powerful contrast. Both the wise and the fool have certain activities that they call fun or delightful. It's their sport, what they like to do. The difference, though, is that for the fool, the sport that is theirs by choice is wickedness. For the wise man, it's pursuing wisdom. It's always growing and pursuing that and seeking that. The wise man is therefore teachable. He doesn't walk in the way of the fool. This is an example of that. This is in Exodus chapter 18. Don't turn there, I'll just reference it. You probably know this story, but Moses was literally working himself to death as he's trying to lead the nation, and it's a mess. It's just overwhelming. And his father-in-law, Jethro, comes to him and gives him very good wisdom on how to make this much more manageable, so that he's not judging everything, every case, but he's got other wise men who are there who are able to also help lead this nation. And he learned from it, and he gained wisdom. He was teachable. Another thing about a wise man is that he will learn from a rebuke. Chapter 9, verse 8. Do not reprove a scoffer, lest he hate you. Reprove a wise man and he will love you. Again, one of the hardest lessons for us to learn, I think, in life is when not to bother. When not to bother. When there is no value in saying anything. When you have finally that wisdom that is sufficient for you to identify the man or woman who is the fool or the scoffer, the one who just mocks and hates and stiffens and resists and excuses. There comes a point where you just need to just leave them alone and just let the consequences of the of their folly or their foolishness come upon them. We had in our home a saying. It was just, at some point you need to let them drink from the gutter, and maybe at some point they'll realize that's exactly what they're doing and they will want to change. And that's only going to happen with the grace of God, where he takes the fool who is wishing he could eat with the pigs, and he comes to his senses and comes back to his father. Don't waste your time trying to fix what is broken and doesn't want to be mended. But you rebuke a man or woman who is wise and pursuing wise wisdom, and they will love you. Isn't that weird? Because what they delight in more than their own pride is wisdom. And so you're doing something that is good. So when the proverb says, faithful are the wounds of a friend and deceitful are the kisses of an enemy, trust me, the fool doesn't see it that way. They're offended that you wounded them. And they're inviting the kisses. And then they scratch your head when their enemies destroy them. But for the wise man, the wise woman, when the wounds come, they recognize them for what they are. And they're thankful. That doesn't happen overnight, does it? That, again, let me give free, cheap parenting advice again. Teach your kids at a young age to take it. That they can take a rebuke. That they don't dissolve into tears. I remember my kids, you know, the chins start quivering and they're, oh, it's like, stop. Just stop. And I wasn't a hateful father. You can talk to my kids. They're all here. And all not be in the room, so they'll talk freely. But I would make them listen to me. I would not allow just them to dissolve into tears and then, oh, and then I'm going to be quick to comfort them. I want them to learn how to take a rebuke. If they're not going to be able to learn it from mom and dad who love them, what are they going to do when it's somebody who doesn't have that much love for them? Teach your children, quote unquote, to be tough. Not in an unbiblical sense, but in the sense that they're used to hearing a rebuke, they're used to hearing a correction, and they know that it comes for their good, and then they also know the feeling of what a word of praise is. But teach them so that they learn how to receive that and appreciate that. And sometimes what I would make my children go back and do is thank an adult that did rebuke them, and they were all bugged, and they come home and they're like, well, so-and-so did this. And I'm like, and what did you say? Oh. And they're all bugged because they got yelled at. I'm like, they didn't even raise their voice. Come on. In fact, I've had people say, well, you yelled at me. I'm like, my granddaughter Claire gets yelled at worse than you just got. You know? I mean, learn to take it and accept it. And I would tell them, you go back to that person, you first of all seek their forgiveness, and second of all thank them. Teach them to do that so that when they're older, that they're a man, a woman who receives and is appreciative of the one who is rebuking them. So in chapter 8, he shows love to the one. I mean, verse 8, he shows one love to the one who rebukes. In verse 9, the first part of that, he will gain more wisdom because of that rebuke. And the rebuke it teaches him then what's really important in the second half of verse 9 and into 10. You teach a righteous man and he will increase his learning. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom, and the knowledge of the Holy One is understanding. The fool always will hate rebuke. He will not learn from them, although they will complain about the consequences of their foolishness. And then a wise man will control his lips. In chapter 10 of Proverbs, verse 19, where there are many words, transgression is unavoidable. But he who restrains his lips is wise. I remember giving the counsel to a person once, actually more than once, but I said, you know, every time you say, I just have to say, every time you've done that in my presence, what you then say shouldn't have been said. So why don't you teach yourself that when those words come out of your mouth, that you then be quiet? Because what that means is that you've reached your patience, end of your patience. You're done, and you've just got to say something. And all you do is create a problem. The wise man, the wise woman knows there's a time to speak, but they also know there's a time not to. There's a time where there's no value in the speaking, or they're going to go further than they meant. Have you ever done that? I've done this preaching. Oh, it's terrible, where you say something and you're like grabbing the words as they're, and you're like, oh, they are so out there, aren't they? What a fool. You know, I make my living with my words. And so this verse is a frightening verse, where many words are. You could even argue for shorter sermons, right? Like 10 minutes. Can't get in too much trouble there. But the wise man recognized that when you're just talking, And there's no real purpose to the talk. Sin is unavoidable. And if you don't believe me, go all by yourself so that you won't talk. Go sit down at Common Grounds or some other coffee shop where you can easily hear the conversations and just listen. Listen to people who are there, and they're there just to have a cup of coffee with their friend, and they're just talking. And listen to the ebb and the flow of the conversations. It's shocking. Just shocking, the kinds of things that they're just off the top of their mouth, head, and they're coming out of their mouth, and nowhere I think that they're intending evil, but evil is abounding there. That ability for you and I to discern that we're coming to that threshold of where wisdom is ending and our mouths need to become quiet. Sometimes people want you to speak and you just need to say, I'm not ready to speak yet. I need to think about how to best speak this. I told you last week that there are times where I'm called to give an answer, and it's like, I don't know what to say. I don't know what to say. And yet you need to give an answer. And so that makes you all the more needing to pursue wisdom so that your lips are dripping with wisdom all the while. In James 1:19, he tells us that there's a time that we are to be slow to speak. So it's not that you don't talk. It's just that you're slow to do so. And when you do, it's wisdom. Or Abraham Lincoln's famous line, it's better to remain silent and be thought a fool than to speak out and remove all doubt. Have you not met fools that way? Where you think there's something, and then they start talking, and you're like, okay. In Proverbs chapter 12, verse 18, there is one who speaks rashly like the thrust of a sword, but the tongue of the wise brings healing. You know, anyone can just beat you. Anyone can just stab you like a sword and just destroy you. But the wise man is speaking in such a manner that he brings or she brings healing into the situation. Now that healing might involve surgery, right? It might involve a shot. It might involve all the other kinds of nasty things that doctors must do so that they might promote healing. But that's what wisdom is wisdom is coming into the situation, analyzing the situation, speaking into it in such a way that it brings about healing rather than just additional harm. I've listened and I've participated in this to my shame in my past, where somebody says something and I just nail them for no purpose other than to nail them. And then you kind of walk away like, huh, to what end was that redemptive? And to what end was that helpful? To what end did you strengthen or heal? You didn't. You just brought harm and you poured gasoline, if you will, on it. Proverbs chapter 16, verse 23. The heart of the wise teaches his mouth and adds persuasiveness to his lips. The wise man's heart is wise, and therefore it informs his lips as to what to say. And that makes his words all the more persuasive. You know, there have been times that I've had to try to speak in wisdom and give counsel to somebody, and they're fighting me every step of the way. They're scared, they're nervous, they're hurt, whatever it might be, and they are not taking anything I say. But I from my discernment, I can't prove it, but I could not see that they were trying to act like a fool where they were going to scoff at the word. They just were scared. Some of you have been there, right? You something bad's happening, you don't know what to do, and you're just scared. And somebody's trying to help you, and you're just scared. And so I on more than one occasion have done this, where I just look and say, just say, stop. Please just stop. And just appeal to them. Have I ever, ever harmed you? Well, no. Have I ever said something that was unfair? No. Have I ever lied to you, to your knowledge at least? No. I said, have I always sought to bring to you the truth of the word? Yes. I said, then can you trust me to just listen? Just listen. I know it's scary. I know you don't know what's going on. But let me just talk. And let me have you just listen, and let's see where it ends up. And most of the time you'll see them, they'll just remember, yeah, that's true. And you see them, they take a deep breath and they just kind of calm down, and then they begin to hear. And now you're two people working on a situation together trying to fix what is broken. If you have garnered wisdom into your life, beloved, that will be all the more easier. But if you are a man or woman who knows the right thing to do, but your life has been marked by folly and foolishness and stupidity, those opportunities to help will be very hard, because the people will already know you for what you really are like, and you won't be able to help them. And this is a terrible thing when a mom or a dad have chosen a way of laziness in the rearing of their children, so that now their children are 16 and able to do great folly, right? And the son or the daughter don't even listen to you because you've never been really concerned about their heart for the last 16 years. Again, free cheap advice to you mom and dads out there. Let them see that you are intimately, infinitely interested in their well-being when they're 3, when they're 2. That's why, dads, you always take a child with you. They're yours. What a blessing to be able to do. Always look to instruct them. Always look to protect them. Always look to guard them. Teach them, as I said, to take it like a man, as we would say to Maddie. A man doesn't act that way. A man does this. Simple thing. When Maddie would push his sisters, you know, the poor guy, I mean, you got to feel for him. He's got 4 mothers. You know, it's true. Tim would call me. You got to talk to him. Why? And, you know, I had to talk to him a lot. So it wasn't that shock when I get that phone call. But she's like, you got to talk to him. I'm like, why do I got to talk to him? She's like, he did this or this. And she is just so offended. And I'm laughing. I'm like, I'm not going to rebuke him. There's nothing wrong with what he did. That's just not right. I said, no, that's what boys do. You're a girl. I know it doesn't make sense to you, but that was pretty cool. Now, I wouldn't recommend it for my daughters. I was raising 3 daughters, and so I raised them one way. But I was raising a man. So I want him to think about that. And so when he would push his sisters, it wasn't just pop them. You don't push sisters. That's not the point. That's not what a man does. A man guards the woman. He cherishes the woman. He protects her. He provides safety for her. He does not take advantage of her weakness. You're not allowed to mock your sisters because they're not as strong as you. God made them that way. You can't make a baby. You know, we learn to train your sons and your daughters so that they might learn to glory and rejoice in the unique differences that the genders are, so that the man is seen as something that he ought to be and the woman is seen for what she ought to be, and we rejoice in those differences because when they come together it makes a glorious and wonderful thing. All of that is just you putting words that are persuasive words into the heart of your child, and that's because you, from the beginning of your parenting, you establish yourself as a bastion and a wellspring, if you will, of wisdom. We all need to have the tongue of the learned. All of our words need to be poured out of conviction rather than just feeling. In Isaiah 50, just hear these words as I read them. Isaiah writes, "The Lord God has given me the tongue of disciples that I may know how to sustain the weary one with a word. He awakens me morning by morning. He awakens my ear to listen as a disciple. The Lord God has opened my ear and I was not disobedient, nor did I turn back. I gave," now listen, "I gave my back to those who strike me and my cheeks to those who pluck out the beard. I did not cover my face from humiliation and spitting, for the Lord God helps me. Therefore I am not disgraced. Therefore I have set my face like flint and I know that I shall not be ashamed." That giving of wisdom, the receiving of wisdom, and even when it's time to be beaten or disciplined or whatever, that they did not shirk back. Or Paul says in 2 Corinthians 1:4, speaking of God who comforts us in all our afflictions so that we may be able to comfort those who are in any affliction with a comfort which we ourselves are comforted by God. I do not know cancer. Perhaps I will, but I don't. But Tim Cady knows cancer. So Tim is able to speak the words of comfort that I cannot even speak in those unique situations. His wife has endured that trial. She carries with her wisdom that she can speak into it. All of you have endured certain trials, and in those, God has brought you comfort in ways that perhaps you didn't see or even understand at the time. But in all of that, recognizing, if you are wise, that all of that was so that then in those days of affliction for others, you might speak the words of comfort. Not just comforting words, but the words of comfort that the Lord brought to you, the words of eternal hope in Jesus Christ, that this is not our home, right? That we are aliens and strangers. We walk in days which are evil. But that the Lord has obtained victory through Jesus Christ, and that he is seated in the heavenly places far above the powers and principalities and rulers of this age, and that he is proclaiming his victory through us, his church. Wise men and women recognize that, but it's only because we're pursuing wisdom. We only have 5 minutes. Obviously, I'm still not yet done with this sermon that will never end. But is this helpful? Does this make sense to you, that wisdom is not some vague little, I keep saying it, I mean, you're just not going to find it accidentally when you're checking your pockets. It's that purposefulness. And for some of you, I see it, and we rejoice as we watch you, that you're willfully actually seeking it and acquiring it. And others, we're not sure that you have any idea where you're going. You're just kind of here, I'm not going to point out to any one of you. I just ask you to examine yourself. To what way are you applying some of the things that we are speaking of here? Wisdom is hard to learn. I told you that and told you that, and I'll keep telling you that's hard. You don't just become wise. Being a fool takes no effort at all because we're born that way. What I want, and I hope and desire to see, and I think we'll not go further into this message even next week, because what follows in Ephesians 5 is just filled with that wisdom. And so I want to get to what it looks like to be a husband who loves his wife, a wife who respects her husband, a father who trains up his children, and children who obey their fathers, and such. But the wisdom that starts with the gospel of Jesus Christ is a wisdom this age can never know. ever. So let me encourage all you who are Christians in this room that even at your worst, you're infinitely wiser than the wisest of this age. So even if you're like, yeah, I find myself over in that column too much and a fool, if you have trusted and resting in the finished work of Jesus on the cross, his death and burial and resurrection, you are infinitely already more wise. Second, the spirit of wisdom resides in you. Third, the repository of eternal wisdom is sitting on your lap in the Word. And so as you continue this, all it really means is that for some of you, it's just simply a simple prayer of confession, of acknowledging that you've walked in foolishness here and that you begin then to make the changes as you grow and you learn. Remember that true wisdom begins because you have trusted in Jesus Christ, but it only begins. From there, it's the putting it on and growing in it and flourishing in it as you grow all the more. And that's only going to happen as you seek it, you treasure it, pray for it, and apply it. And that's my prayer for Missio, is that we would be that church.